passing up opportunities to help some of the world's poorest people who might produce something in developing countries that I could buy, and by trade they could weigh out of poverty. So there's conflicting issues there as well. Should I be buying food that's been genetically modified? Is that a risk to the environment or to human health? That's some of the range. Then with seafood, I guess there are further questions. If you're eating fish, are they wild caught fish? Were they caught from stocks that are sustainably fished, or are we fishing out this particular species of fish as we have with so many other fish in the past? If they were farmed fish, again, you've got problems about waste of resources that go into the catching the fish that you then grind up and feed to the farmed fish, and also sometimes local pollution problems in the area where the fish farming is.
The book that you wrote with Jim Mason, the book that we're talking about today, The Way We Eat, Why Our Food Choices Matter. Why did you take the approach that you did, looking at sort of three families and the way that they approach their diet?
Well, Jim Mason and I came up with this approach because we wanted to get away from a sort of dry presentation that just went through all the problems and gave facts and figures. And we thought if we can humanize it a little bit, introduce three families that are having very different kinds of diets, and thereby, you know, introduce the families and show why they make the choices they do, and what are the implications of the choices they make. So that was the plan, to get three different families, one that eats the standard kind of American diet, they shop at Walmarts, they go to the fast food chains, one that we call conscientious omnivores, who try to be more concerned about the environmental impact of the food they're buying and how the animals are treated, but still do eat animal products. And the third that's completely vegan, doesn't eat any animal products at all. So we found through various contacts three families like that, and then we went shopping with them, saw what they buy, and tried to trace those products back to the source so that we could talk about how they were produced.
And it seems like you spent some time with them. I mean, you heard conversations are described in the book, and just the way people talked about how they approach food in their lives was part of the book.
Yes, that's an important part of the book. That's right, to try and understand why they make these decisions, to look at the pressures. I mean, we don't want to, obviously, to me, the family that's eating the standard American diet is basically buying factory farm products. It's really the wrong thing to do, because it's terrible for the lives of the animals, it's terrible for the environment and impact and so on. But, we want to understand why they do that. We're not there to sort of, condemn them. They're a family that they're living in a suburb of Little Rock in Arkansas. They've got young children. They don't have a whole lot of money. They get by. But, they have a lot of pressures on them, and that's what makes them do that. And our other family that's more conscientious is better off and has a bit, the luxury of thinking, and also perhaps they have more higher education, so they're more aware of some of these issues.
They can choose to buy the organically grown meat when it costs.
More, certainly, yeah.
And it seems like one of the issues that you make in this work is trying to figure out the sort of the life of the food in everybody's diet, sort of where it comes from, how it started, just all the areas of its production. And that's a very interesting part, and sort of where, as you mentioned, where a lot of the ethical issues arise, is how it's produced. What were some of the barriers that you found as far as finding out information on how food gets?
Well, this was the first problem we had, particularly with the family that the shops at Walmarts and goes to fast food chains, that these places were not going to reveal to us how their food is produced. We wrote to more than 100 corporations, and we got negative responses or no response at all from nearly all of them. And the exceptions were just small organic places that were more open or let us see. But the big corporations don't want you to see this. And that's clear that they, it's not in their interest. In fact, we quote an Oregon professor, Peter Cheek, a professor of agricultural science, who says that, it's not in agribusiness's interest for people to know how the food is produced, because it might turn them off. They might stop eating chicken, for example, if they understood how industrialized chicken was produced.
And it's sort of like the old theory that you sometimes see of you shouldn't eat anything that you couldn't kill yourself.
Well, that's what people sometimes say, yeah. But it's not, of course, just a matter of killing. It's you know, the matter of the way they live. And particularly, you know, you have pigs, for example, sows, the breeding sows, that all their lives are confined in small stalls where they can't turn around. They don't have room to walk a step or two. So, you know, could you really do that to a pig? Could you stand there and watch that pig every day, frustrated in the stall, unable to walk around?
Did you share your knowledge of that kind of thing with the families involved in this?
We did, yes. We went back to them and talked to them about it. In fact, with one of the families, the family eating the standard American diet, we even brought in someone who'd worked at Tyson's chicken plant because they were buying Tyson chicken, one of the biggest chicken producers, of course, industrial chicken production. And he was telling them how, you know, he had in a single shift, his job was to kill about 70,000 chickens in an eight-hour shift, and how at that speed you could not see that every bird was humanely killed. And if things were going wrong, the production line was going wrong, they weren't getting stunned, they were going alive into this scalding tank of boiling water, which is supposed to remove their feathers, the foreman wouldn't allow them to stop the line because they didn't want to lose production. So we brought them together, and they were pretty disturbed, obviously, to understand that about the way their food was produced.
Do you know whether they made any adjustments?
I don't know that they did. I mean, they were disturbed about it, but you know, as I say, they sort of felt a bit stressed, and I'm not sure they were thinking about it at the time that we left, and we haven't heard that they have really changed. And that's an interesting question because it shows, you know, what are the pressures? What does it really take to get people to change if they aren't going to say, okay, that's so shocking, that's so horrific what I've just heard, that I'm never going to buy that chicken again.
Right. Yeah, that's an issue for me, is the people who are out there don't have a lot of this knowledge, just know, you know, particularly the issue of low cost. That's probably highest on one of their value system.
That's right. That's a problem.
How does the ethical issue come?
How do you get ethics to trump cost, to trump money?
Yes.
I don't know. I think we really need to sort of look at this as psychologists almost and say, well, what is it that motivates people? And, you know, when do we get to the point where ethics becomes more important than money? Is it just that you have to have a certain level of comfort, that you have the luxury of being able to think about buying something that's a bit more expensive? Or, you know, even that's not quite the issue, because of course people can eat very cheaply as vegetarians if they're buying you know, bulk dry food, by beans, lentils, grains, and so on. That's extremely cheap. Even some of the meat substitutes, the Boca burgers and so on, are really pretty cheap. So it's not always that. It's also habit, I think. It's the habit that people just are used to eating this kind of food, and they keep on doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it seems like the issue of economics that you write about comes from two directions. There's the person buying it, the consumer, say, who... that cost is an issue, and then the profit motive seemed to be the driving force behind every aspect of the commercial process.
Right. Well, I mean, that's, I guess, you know, largely what you expect in a market economy, because those that don't produce cheaply are just going to get, you know, they're going to lose out in the competition. And the only thing that can stop that is if consumers really have strong ethical principles, and if consumers refuse to buy this. So, for example, because there are now consumers who want to buy organic eggs or eggs from cage-free hens, there are now more producers going into that area. That creates the market. But that's what it takes. Without the ethical consumer, you can't really get the ethical farmer.
I'm speaking with Peter Singer. The title of his latest book with Jim Mason is The Way We Eat, Why Our Food Choices Matter. Now, you've done a lot of research in this area prior to this particular book. In chronicling the production aspects of this food, was there some kind of thing that stuck out to you in the level of, I don't know if I should use the word atrocity, but just the way that animals are being dealt with in the world now for food? Is there something that was on the increase or on the decrease, or how did you see?
Well, unfortunately, this industrial farming worldwide is still increasing because as countries like China become more affluent, their people follow our Western habits of wanting more meat, And so they're introducing Western-style factory farming into China now, which is a real tragedy because it's environmentally it's a disaster. It's going to cause a lot of pollution, a lot more use of fossil fuel. And the Chinese people, you know, are going to become less healthy by eating more meat. There's good studies that show that. And yet, you know, that's the consumer demand. That's what's happening. So that's something that really worries me globally.
You end the book with some principles that you sort of referred to in a way when we asked you the first question of this interview, but they're the five principles of ethical eating, which I think are quite good to use as things to be aware of as you're looking at how you approach your diet. Can we go over those for a minute?
Okay.
You don't have to remember now.
I can
sort of...
Yeah, well, obviously transparency is the one you're referring to that we started with. That's the first principle, that you should be able to know where your food has come from. And that's really important. What else have we got?
Second one you listed was fairness.
Yes. Fairness, I think, is something that, really, how are the workers treated? How are the neighbors of the industry treated? It's a question of really, are the costs really incorporated in the product or are they passed on to other people? So, for example, we find that very often factory farms are very bad neighbors. They cause terrible smells when they move into the area and people can't go out in their yard anymore when the wind's blowing from that direction because the smell is so bad. Or they create flies and mice. You know, one family complained they caught 100 mice in a day or something like that. Another one said that after the chicken farms moved in, there were so many flies that their house went from a distance looked like it was gray instead of white. So these are costs that factory farming creates, but they're not reflected in the price of the product. So it's unfair in a way. It's an unfair system because it passes costs on to other people who have no choice but to bear those costs.
Mm-hmm. And then we get into an issue you call humanity about suffering.
That's really what we've been talking about whether or not you think that it's okay to kill animals for food. Most people would agree that we ought not to inflict suffering on them just to get a slightly cheaper product, and yet that's what we're doing on a massive scale. So I think that's a principle to bear in mind. Did the animal at least have a decent life? If you are going to eat animal products, did it at least have a decent life?
Yeah, it was interesting in the book to see the farms that you profiled where people were attempting to make improvements on the sort of factory farming style and the various levels of what people would do and what they would think would be adequate.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's different ways you can do it. And, you know, we visit a lot of different farms and some of them are really highly ethical and some of them are sort of just, you know, they're trying to pass the minimal standards of being organic without really having a commitment to the ethical spirit of it.
Another issue is social responsibility. Which we've also touched on in this interview.
Yes, that's right. And that includes, how are the workers treated, or if we're buying products from developing countries, do the growers get a decent return? Is it a fair trade product? We talk about the fair trade labeling scheme, which I think is a good way of trying to ascertain that the original growers in developing countries get a reasonable return, can afford to feed their family and educate their children from what they're selling.
Mm-hmm. And finally, preserving life and health.
Yes, that's right. Well, what we're saying here is, look, where people need to get something to preserve their life and health, you know, you can justify doing things that you wouldn't when it's just a luxury. So that's why we say, you know, if we're saying, look, perhaps it's better to avoid animal products or certainly avoid those that are not, those that are factory farmed. But if, you know, you need to eat to survive, if you're in a situation like hunter-gatherers or something like that, that's a different ethical situation. But we are in this situation where we can walk into a supermarket and get a whole range of different sorts of products, and we can nourish ourselves well without animal products. So that creates a different moral situation for us.
What do you see as an ethicist? What do you see as the most ethical way to approach your diet?
I guess I admire the vegan family who don't eat any animal products and who try and buy organic products when they can. I think that has the lightest impact on the planet and, of course, avoids the problem of suffering on animals. But, we can respect the conscientious omnivores who do eat animal products, but at least try and make sure that they're not buying factory farm products and therefore are taking an ethical stance to their diet and are thinking conscientiously about it and going to some trouble to avoid supporting that system of factory farming.
You write about the dumpster diver and the ethics of dumpster diving.
Yeah, that was fun. We went out with some dumpster divers who actually don't buy food at all. They go around to the supermarkets, to the dumpster bins in the evening, and we were amazed what they could get out of that. You know, you would think that the food is all somehow bad or rotten, past its use-by date, but there was a lot of perfectly good food, packaged food, completely clean, dry, non-perishable products that were well within their use-by date. And so we went out, and in about 2 hours, we'd filled the trunk of the car with a lot of food, went home, cooked a great pasta dinner with broccoli and tomato sauce, sort of like pasta primavera, all for free. It was amazing what you can do. And that, of course, highlights the issue of the amount of waste in our society and how much is thrown out that's perfectly good. And that, of course, creates further impact on the planet because we produce more than we need.
As a sort of total look at this issue, what are you particularly interested in having people take away from this book or this discussion about how we live our lives and how we...
Well, I guess the first thing is, you know, really think about what you're eating. Food is an ethical issue. You know, we don't usually think of it as an ethical issue, but it is, because it has such a big impact on the planet, on other humans, and on non-human animals. So think about it as an ethical issue. And then if people ask me, what's one thing that I ought not to do? Well, as I've been saying, avoid factory farm products. They're the worst in just about every way you look at it.
Peter Singer, is there anything else that you think is important to add or stress here in this interview?
I think we've covered a lot of the important points. As I say, you know, food is an ethical issue. It matters. Try and think of it that way.
Are you going to continue on writing about animal issues or food issues or the combination?
Not immediately. I mean, I think this book covers what I wanted to say about it. I'll be looking at other issues. I'm thinking of writing about global poverty next. Another big issue.
Related issue. Okay. Yeah. I want to thank you very much for coming into KABU while you were in Portland.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been a great interview.
Oh, well, good.
I'm glad to get the chance to communicate with your listeners.
Good. And let me tell the listeners again the title of this book, The Way We Eat, and the subtitle, Why Our Food Choices Matter, Peter Singer and Jim Mason. This is Kathleen Stevenson for the Radio Zine. And before we wrap up today's Speaking of Animals program, we're going to have a couple news items related to animals and animal rights issues. Here's one from Newsday.com. In New York, an animal rights activist drew a maximum 6-month sentence in jail. This happened on Tuesday, for sneaking into New York State's largest egg farm to videotape thousands of chickens confined to small wire cages. Adam Durand was convicted earlier this month on 3 counts of criminal trespassing, a misdemeanor. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive terms of 90 days and fined $1,500 and ordered to serve 100 hours of community service. He denied breaking into a shed during 3 nighttime visits in 2004. He said that he climbed through a hole in a wall. He also said he had no intention of removing birds from the farm, which was operated by a Rochester, New York-based supermarket chain called Wegmans, where 700,000 hens produce more than 500,000 eggs per day. 2 women who were with him took away 11 hens, and they said because in every case they were sick or dying and there was a feeling that they needed veterinary care. Durand's lawyer said he hadn't expected Durand to receive any jail time. The 2 friends who accompanied him to the farm pleaded guilty to trespassing and were placed on probation. Durand and 2 others were arrested last summer when he produced a short documentary called Wegman's Cruelty that was screened at a Rochester movie house. The film contained footage of hen corpses lying in cages with live hens, a few that had fallen into deep manure pits, and others with their heads apparently caught in wire cages. About 95% of the nation's eggs are produced at caged hen egg farms. The poultry industry says the system cuts production costs and limits the animal's exposure to diseases. And this story from today's Oregonian, it's received a lot of attention. Yesterday, a judge threw out part of a $1.625 million lawsuit that dealt with the value of family pets. Eve Miller, the Clackamas County Circuit Court judge in the case, ruled that she will allow a $1.325 million lawsuit to proceed against an Estacada man convicted of intentionally running over his neighbor's 14-year-old dog. Because of the injuries in this incident, the dog had to be put down. The judge ruled that a jury can consider awarding punitive damages and compensation for the intentional infliction of emotional stress, but she said she didn't believe loss of animal companionship was a viable theory under Oregon law. That loss of companionship ruling overturned a previous judge's decision, and Gordy Duckler, a Portland law attorney, said that issue is not dead and said he may appeal Judge Miller's decision. The trial is expected to last 6 days. And finally, in London, around 100 animal rights campaigners stripped naked in central London on Sunday to protest the use of traditional bearskin hats worn by military guards on ceremonial parade. The protesters carried placards saying bears slaughtered for the Queen's guards, indefensible, and called on the Queen and the Ministry of Defense to end the use of foot-high bear pelt hats known as a busby. A spokesperson for the Ministry of Defense said they were looking for alternatives to the Canadian bearskin used for the hats, but that was proving very difficult. And so that's the last story I have for you today. Laurie Sonnenfeld, the host of Speaking of Animals, will be back next month on the fourth Wednesday of June at 9:30 a.m. Thanks very much.
My sight is the owls and the trees. My sight is the whales and the sea. I shot it from the mountain. Down to the wire, fight or flight. They try to tell me might is right, but there's no place left to run and hide. And I ain't going down without a fight. I am choosing sides. My side is the mountain side. My side is the rocks in the earth. My side is decay and rebirth. So much destruction our eyes can see. It's down to the split with humanity. We've been running out of time, and the chasm is growing deep and wide. Let's be choosing sides. Our side is the white side. Our side is the I didn't have to be choosing, choosing, choosing.
The time is 10 a.m. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, USA.